I'm Carol Hills, and this is The World. Donald Trump wants to make America great again. If you've paid any attention at all to political news lately, you're well aware that the Donald is rising. The billionaire is a surprise frontrunner in the GOP primary race. But what does President Trump's vision for America look like? And what about his foreign policy? David Rennie is the Washington bureau chief for The Economist magazine. He's here in the studio with me. Thanks so much for coming in.
Hello.
David, you just had the rare chance to do a long one-on-one interview with Donald Trump. Let's start with a short clip from your conversation with him. It starts with a question from you about the Middle East.
What's your view, looking back, on whether America should be nation-building in these parts of the world? Can you do it?
We should be building a nation. It should be called the United States of America.
Right.
That's the nation we should be building. We're spending all our money nation-building in other places, mm-hmm. and they don't even want us, okay?
David, is the bottom line for Trump on foreign policy that he's basically a sort of an old-fashioned isolationist?
I think it is. And I think it shows how kind of feeble our analysis has been the last several years, where we've tried to divide Republicans and conservative Americans into hawks and doves. I think what he's showing us is there's another very ancient tradition in America, which is the desire to be such a strong and powerful country that the rest of the world certainly does not challenge you. So he says himself, "I am the most militaristic person you'll ever meet," is his phrase. But he doesn't actually ever want to use it. He's a kind of heavily armed isolationist. And I think the lesson that he's drawn from the last 10 years is Americans are sick and tired of trying to tidy up the rest of the world. And they just want the rest of the world to be a bit more frightened of America and to just mind its manners and look after itself.
What's interesting, though, is that at another point in your interview with Trump, he also told you he would seize the oil fields in Syria and Iraq and that he'd have U.S. troops guard the oil. That's not terribly isolationist, is it?
No, well, that's a weird one. So his whole thing about ISIS is, I think what he's really saying to his voters is, we are still, don't worry, we are still the most powerful country in the world, but our fault is that our leaders are soft and naive. So I think his argument is, if we lost in Iraq, if it feels like it went wrong, it's not because the troops were any, you know, were cowardly or not brilliant at their jobs. It's because we were too soft. We tried to build democracies. What we should have done is just gone in, grabbed the oil and been more selfish. America should be more selfish. That's his kind of core argument. Now, I then had to push him a bit on, if you grab these oil fields, who then guards them? And he ends up, kind of logic takes him down the path of saying there would be American soldiers sitting in the middle of Iraq near the border with Syria, sort of holding these oil fields. And you have to assume that from a military point of view, that's mad.
Now, how would President Trump defeat ISIS?
He has this whole, it's a bit like Nixon's peace plan for Southeast Asia. It's kind of, you know, I can tell you afterwards, it's secret for now, but whoo, it's going to be great. I mean, he's holding his cards close to his chest. Where he was amazingly candid was about what he would do in places like China, the South China Sea. He said a lot of stuff about beating up China when it comes to trade. But I asked him, you know, what about these reefs that we've seen photographs being built, airstrips being built on these contested islands in the middle of the South China Sea? What would you do about that? And he basically said, that's up to Japan and South Korea and the others to sort out. You know, those allies have been free riders on American security for too long. And on specifically on China, he said, you know, I don't like it. It's very hostile, but it's a long way away. And we got a lot of problems. That's an amazingly pure isolationist message.
He also talked a lot about trade policy with China and the effect of China's devaluations of their currency and really tried to sort of get tough about that. What were his recommendations in terms of trying to be a counterforce to China in trade negotiations?
Well, it all fits into this frame of his that lots and lots of politicians in the rich world are trying to explain why globalization has changed the economy so dramatically and why people can't have a job in, you know, the local factory making TV sets in America. His answer is, it's really, really simple. The only reason that China is competing, the only reason that China can outbid us on these things is because they've cheated on their currency. And he's taking a kind of a real thing, which is that countries can play around with the exchange rate of their currency to make their goods cheaper. And he's blown it up into this gigantic conspiracy theory that explains everything that has happened to rich Western economies over the last several decades. And then if you just put President Trump in the Oval Office, a tough guy who knows how to cut deals, he would say to the Chinese, well, I've done some maths and your cheating on the currency is the equivalent of a 12% import tax on anything American. So I'm going to slap a 12% import tax on everything that China imports to America. That would, of course, tank many very large American companies that do lots of their manufacturing in China. It would make things much more expensive here. It would also be illegal under world trade rules. I mean, from an economics point of view, it is a pretty extraordinary idea. He's basically willing to start a global trade war, is what he's promising to do.
Now, he was quite critical of the Iran deal that the Obama administration has just negotiated. He said he would never make such a stupid deal. Those were his words. He talked a lot about his own competence as a tough negotiator. What about that message is resonating with Republican voters right now?
I think it's not just Republican voters. I think one of the fascinating things is, as we get more information about who his supporters are, they're not actually kind of characterized by the intensity of their right-wing beliefs, because he's taking votes from, you know, centrists and even some ex-Democrats. I think what they are is characterized by the intensity of their anger. These are people who think that this country no longer feels like it should. It doesn't feel like the country they grew up in. It feels like it's being kind of messed around by the rest of the world, that our enemies do not fear us, our friends don't trust us, and the whole economy, everything just kind of feels gone to hell in a handcart. And he has this incredibly simple, personalized explanation that, don't worry, America still has all the cards. America is still the greatest country in the world. You just need one change of management at the top. You need a tough guy rather than these dummies, elite sort of morons who are getting everything wrong. And by proof, he points to his business success and says, look, I can do that. I am that tough, cunning guy. Give me a chance. And that really resonates with a chunk of the electorate.
David Rennie writes the Lexington column for The Economist magazine. He recently conducted an interview with Donald Trump. Thanks so much.
Thank you.